Midday, Wednesday. Danielle. She was on duty when they came through the door. Everybody was. Lunch was their heaviest time for traffic. People liked to buy jewelry in the middle of the day, mostly office workers on their lunch break, couples, single men. You got a good mix. If you wanted to make sales, you either ate early, or you ate late, or you didn't eat at all. But these two weren't customers. She saw that right away. They weren't even a couple, at least not the sort of couple who usually rolled into a jewelry shop. A middle-aged black woman who looked like a high school principal, accompanied by a white knucklehead who could have been the wrestling coach. The woman was a little on the heavy side, but carried it well, her clothes spotless, not a hair out of place. The man had a body built of free weights and beer. His hair was shaped by electric razors and gel. No, they were definitely not here to buy an engagement ring. There were credentials dangling from their necks she couldn't read from this distance. Tax people, she guessed. Steve would have seen them on the CCTV in his office. He was probably shredding documents already. Tommy was closing a deal on what looked a half-carat solitaire, so that left Britt up. The little dummy thought they were customers, so she came at them with that shit show she called charm. But her smile vanished the moment the woman explained herself. She turned and pointed to Danielle. Here we go, she thought, again. Eden had called last night, just after midnight, but Danielle missed it. She'd gone to bed early, turning her ringer off because of a recent spate of scam-likely calls. So she didn't see that her daughter had called until she woke this morning. She hadn't left a message. Danielle tried to call back, but there was no answer, which meant she'd been unable to forestall whatever nonsense was about to be laid at her feet. Danielle had no issues with the tax people, and her daughter had no money, so maybe they were social services. Although they tended not to come in pairs. The snakes who served summonses and warrants tended to work alone as well. And then she saw the gold shields, and that feeling of annoyance shifted to something deeper. It was the woman who spoke. Danielle Perry? Her voice was surprisingly kind. In most situations, you could say it was soothing, just not in this one. What has she done now? My name is Dorothy Gates. I'm a detective with the state police. This is Detective Procopio from Emerson. Gates looked around. Another couple had just been buzzed in. The showroom wasn't that big. It was getting crowded. Is there somewhere we could talk? The fear was starting to come harder. Eden had been in trouble, God only knew, but it had never required two detectives and privacy to explain. Ms. Perry? There was the storage room, but that was just a walk-in safe with no seating, which left the manager's office. Steve wouldn't be happy having cops in there. I'm not. And then, on cue, he appeared, Steve Slater himself, with his chest hair and loafers. His eyes were locked on the cops. His frown was so profound, it looked like he was in the early stages of a stroke. He said nothing as he approached, as if already following his lawyer's advice. These are Detectives Gates and Procopio, Danielle, good at names, explained. Could we use your office for a minute? My office, he repeated flatly. Among the many things in Steve Slater's office that he wouldn't want the detectives to see was a gleaming Colt 1911 tucked in a holster he'd affixed to the well of his desk. An instrument of mayhem that may or may not be licensed with the Commonwealth. On the rare occasions he buzzed in suspicious characters, he had a charming habit of stuffing the pistol into the front of his action slacks. I would appreciate that, Gates said. Which put Slater on the spot. A refusal would get the cops wondering. Certainly, he said, sounding like someone had superglued his molars together. He unlocked the door with the key at the end of his elastic chain and held it open for them. Do you know how long this will take? He asked as they passed by. Gates turned and smiled sweetly, her face just inches away from his. We'll take just as long as we need. If honey were corrosive, that was her voice. The security door shut heavily behind them. There were two chairs facing his desk. Gates, immediately and fully in charge, motioned to one of them. Miss Perry, I'd like you to take a seat. That's when Danielle knew it was the worst kind of bad. She'd been asked to take a seat once before. Her grandmother, after the heart attack. I'd prefer to stay standing, she said, as if remaining on her feet could ward off what was coming. Please, Gates said, her voice absolute in its kindness. And so she sat. Gates took the other chair, perching right on its edge, ready to get back to her feet at a moment's notice. Procopio remained standing, his arms crossed in front of his chest. His eyes had not left Danielle since Britt had pointed her out. They betrayed no emotion. It was as if she was a test he was studying for. Miss Perry, Gates said. There's really no good way to say this. I'm afraid Eden is dead. Danielle held the woman's eye for a moment, just to be sure, then looked around for something to focus on beside that unbearable sympathy. Her gaze landed on a photo of Slater and his daughters in front of a muscle car. She looked back at the detective. I'm so sorry, Gates said. Danielle wondered why she wasn't crying and carrying on. She knew it was happening somewhere inside her, but it hadn't arrived yet. What happened? Again, this is hard news, but we believe she was murdered. How? It appears she suffered a blow to the head. Where was she? At a house in Emerson. Do you know? Wait. Were Bill and Betsy? They were out of town. You're sure it's her? Her driver's license was at the scene. We've spoken with the homeowners. Danielle, it's her. Was she? We're looking at that. Danielle had run out of questions. When did you last speak with your daughter? Gates asked. Last night? Around 7? Did she indicate there was anything wrong? Procopio asked, his voice what she'd expected. Practice fields and dive bars and roofing gigs. No, Danielle answered. Where is she now? We're looking after her. There was a knock on the door. Procopio answered it. His conversation with Slater didn't last long. And then it was just the three of them again. Danielle remembered something. She called, a second time, last night. And when was that? Just after midnight. What did she say? I missed it. I was asleep. Did she leave a message? Danielle shook her head. I tried to call back this morning, but she was dead. So what am I supposed to do now? We're going to need to ask you some questions, Gates said. Can it be later? I'm not. She didn't know what she wasn't. It has to be now, and let me tell you why. At this point in time, we're still trying to piece it all together, and every moment that passes makes that a little harder to do. Can we not do it in here, at least? Tell you what, come down to the station with us. I think that would be best all around. Is she there? No, she's being looked after by the medical examiner. Can we go there first? We can talk about all of that after we get to the station. In the showroom, whatever everyone was thinking vanished when they saw the look on Danielle's face. Steve said something and then Britt said something, but she couldn't process their words. Eden. Their car was double parked just outside the door. There was a Watertown cruiser as well. It took off after a nod from Gates. Danielle sat in the back. It wasn't far to Emerson. Procopio drove. He used his lights and siren a few times to clear people out of the way. They didn't speak, though Gates turned around every minute or so to check on her. Danielle was finding it hard to hold on to her thoughts. It felt like that moment right before you fell asleep when your mind was pulling you into dreams. Things were still familiar, but also completely different from your normal life. You could imagine Eden being just about any old thing. Under arrest, in the ER, in need of rescue from a fender bender, or a disastrous one-night stand, or angry people who'd been dumb enough to trust her. Laughing her head off over something nobody else even understood. But not dead. She was always alive when you thought about her. More alive than anybody. Fidgeting and talking and asking. Sipping your beer, taking food off your plate. Never quite getting it, but plunging ahead anyway, as if the world was a big, rubberized playground where nothing truly bad could ever happen. You wouldn't happen to know the password to her phone? 1526, Danielle answered immediately. Gates was surprised. It's her birthday plus mine, Danielle explained. I bought it for her on the condition I knew the password. Gates sent a text, and then the silence resumed. They arrived in Emerson. Big houses, big cars, quiet streets. As always, Danielle was struck by how safe it all looked. This must not happen here much, she said. People getting killed.
Things happen all over, Gates said,
a trace of weary wonder in her voice. Emerson Police Headquarters looked more like some high-tech firm on Route 128 than a place where the grubby business of law enforcement took place. There was a van parked outside emblazoned with the name of a local news affiliate. A tiny bottle blonde in skyscraper heels spoke into a camera beside it.
Terrific, Procopio muttered.
They parked in a spot near the back entrance. Inside, there was an open plan office that was both busy and hushed. People glanced at her as she passed, only to look quickly away. A uniformed man, tall, older, silver-haired, awaited them at the door of a glass-walled conference room. He introduced himself as the chief of police. She couldn't catch his name through the oceanic buzz now filling her ears. When he shook her hand, he covered it like it was a waffle in an iron. I am so sorry about your child, he said. A strange choice of words given the fact that her daughter was 20, but unintentionally accurate. Eden was nothing if not a child. They entered the room. She was once again shown where she needed to sit. Gates and Procopio sat across from her. The chief remained standing. There was a manila envelope on the table. Gates produced a small tape recorder, pressed a button, then placed it on the table between them.
I'm going to be recording our conversation. There's also a camera.
Danielle nodded, as if she had a say in any of this.
Okay, what I'm going to do is show you two photographs. We're going to need you to look at them and tell us if they're your daughter. I have to warn you that this is not an easy thing. But it has to be done.
Yeah, I get it.
Okay, here we go.
Thank you for listening to this clip provided to you by Macmillan Audio. To hear more, look for this title wherever audiobooks are sold.